This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, Wednesday, March 2nd, employee assembly meeting, and it is 12:18 p.m. Any late additions to the agenda for today?
I did have something for you.
Sure. Do you want to? We'll just wait until we get to the business.
Okay.
So first thing on our business of the day, thanks for those of you who responded to my email and who can join us for the breakfast with the Board of Trustees on the 10th at 7:30 in the morning. I realize it's really early, so I appreciate everyone who can be there. It is quite early. They have no set agenda for us. They want to have an informal conversation, but Leslie and I were talking about it a little bit and thought it might be nice for us to have some sense of something that we may want to talk about, should they say so. What do you have to say? So just wanted to throw that out there and see if anybody has any immediate thoughts or ideas that they want to talk about for discussion. Make sure we have on our list.
What component of the trustees are coming?
We don't know who all is coming. The person who made the initial request was Andrew Tisch, and we know that he and Pete Meining are going to be there, but those are the only two that we know at this point.
And then I'm sure like the local trustees.
Probably.
Yeah.
Charlie Walcott and Leslie chatted briefly at the leadership breakfast, and want to kind of...
I asked him about other times when the Faculty Senate or the University Assembly had met with the trustees and whether they had an agenda. And he said that there were times that the Senate brought agenda items, but it was never that the trustees had an agenda. So we could go in with no agenda, but it could be a little awkward if they ask us what we want to talk about and we don't know. So he suggested that it's better to be moderately prepared. They may have things to talk about, and that could take the whole time. So,
some of the things that just off the top of our heads that we thought we could share with them is the fact that we're expanding next year and kind of our work that we're doing towards that and why we're expanding. And then also share with them that we put forth a resolution on staff engagement in the workplace. We don't have an answer on that yet, but that we can put that kind of in the president's office. And I don't remember what else.
Those were the only two that we wrote down.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking that, you know, the article that was in the Sun, you know, about all the staff layoffs and staff being overburdened and things like that. Maybe we could just reference that and say, you know, morale is not good. I mean, staff taking huge cuts. Just what's their take on that? Like, what? I mean, do they have thoughts? Do they have initiatives that are coming down the line that we
I'm sure Beth does a good job with the trustees, but I'd like to know if they get any sense about what anything staff related. There's so many committees that hear tons of stuff about students. The faculty are obviously, you know, the faculty. But just do they get a sense of like the value of the staff at Cornell, what we do, and if not, what could we do to get them more staff-related information on a regular basis? So they really have a sense of, like, you know, we're just as essential as, you know, it's a three-legged stool.
Curtis?
Can you also add this in so that it becomes more of an annual event?
Good idea.
Definitely when we can, we're expanding.
Okay. One of the things that I asked Seth about, because this kind of came out of left field, and she thought that that might have been in response to what we saw in the Middle States write-up that the board meets with the EA. Remember, we all questioned that. And Andrew Tisch is on the Middle States committee, so she was wondering if possibly he read that, and this was kind of his saying, oh, we need to do this. Oh, and Seth's here. Beth, we're just talking about the trustee breakfast.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if you have any more info about who else might be joining us.
I do. So there are five trustees who are coming, and I'm pretty sure they're all on the executive committee of the Board of Trustees, and so Pete Minehead is the chairman of the board, and he runs a holding company called HM something. Let's see, we're going to have Bob Harrison and the other Bob.
Abrams? No.
No, not Bob Abrams. The two Bobs. One works for Goldman Sachs. The other one runs Clinton's Global Initiative. Bill Clinton. Diana Daniels is there. And she is retired counsel for the Wall Street Journal. And I think David Dallas Black.
Did these guys mention Tisch, too?
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's not David Dallas, it's Andrew Tisch. Andrew Tisch is, runs the Lowe's company, which owns a lot of real estate in New York City. And he was the one who initiated this meeting. He is on the, kind of the trustee governance committee, and so he's always interested in how things are governed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm pretty sure he initiated this. Very nice guy there. Everyone is really nice, and we're all so thrilled that they want to meet with us.
It's a big time group.
It's a big time group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to use the time on.
So just some of the things, just to catch up with, we were talking about, we're kind of brainstorming some ideas that we can be prepared to talk with them about. So beyond our expansion and the resolution put forth for the survey, just talking with them about, you know, response to the article in the Sun about, you know, staff being overworked and the morale, you know, based on the cuts. And do they have any thoughts on that? Also wanting to know what they actually hear, you know, in their meetings about the staff. You know, do they have a sense of the value that the staff has for Cornell, what we can do to get them more info if they don't get it, kind of thing. And to make an ask for an annual opportunity to have a meeting with them.
These guys are just going to fire back questions to you, though, right back. I mean, somebody like Tisch is going to say, okay, great, what do you think we should do?
And I'm going to say, Gary. You want to take that one?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so maybe we should have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so...
just to help you visualize what it's going to look like, the trustee office asked me if we want to have tables of six or four or one big table.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be five of them, 11 of us, and Mary's coming.
Is she? Okay.
As far as I know, I called Marilyn today, and she's going to let me know if Mary can't come.
Okay.
But
no, I hadn't heard anything.
Yeah, I didn't either, and that they wanted to know in the trustee office. So, you know, small tables or a big table. And depending on what that looks like, we will have pretty intimate conversations, I think.
Probably like three tables of five.
Yeah.
Something like that. What do you guys think?
I like that. I'd like to keep it smaller just so that we can have good conversation rather than just being on one topic.
Yeah, it's not as like this, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
David, did you have
I almost think it would be better. I mean, I love Mary to death, but if she wasn't there, I mean, sometimes she can interject and be a little long-winded in her explanations, and it might be better if she wasn't there. You know what I mean? I wouldn't see that as a downside if she wasn't.
Well, she's an invited guest.
Right.
So she's already been invited.
She's always got great input, but...
Well, if you have an emergency at 7:30 in the morning next Thursday that requires her to be there.
Let's see what I can do.
Our ghost at entertainment.
And I'm hopeful that Mary will kind of let us kind of run the meeting, and I think she just wants to be there to be able to feel things that we may not be able to answer or whatnot.
I agree with you that she can be long-winded, and we don't want her to take over.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think that would happen. You know, my gut feeling is that she wouldn't do that to us as an EA.
Well, and it's less likely if we're at smaller tables.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that something that we want me to broach with her? No. Curtis is saying yes, Beth is saying no.
Well, not like that, but I would say, I don't want you to talk, but, you know, if you, like, remind her in your meeting what the purpose of, you know, it's kind of like...
We won't be meeting with her beforehand, but I can certainly update her to say, these are some of the topics that we're hoping to... Yeah. To share with the board, and we're looking forward to our opportunity to talk with them.
And the board would like to get that message too. Mm-hmm. They want just a heads up on maybe some things that we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that would just be nice of us, even if it does turn into a tangent.
Right. But I think there's a way we can put that out there without saying we don't want you to...
Are there things they want to talk about?
No, not that I know of. There's been no mm-hmm. agenda set forth. I think they want to just get a feel for us. And I think that's just an honest interest that they have. When you ask them about how much they know about the employees, I'm going to guess that all they know is what they hear by asking me, and that the president has brought up the employees at just about every meeting, at least once, when we talk about the staff downsizing and have spoken very highly of the employees and the Ithaca community, and that Cornell has a responsibility to the Ithaca community. So I'm curious to know what they say then.
Yeah. That's a good question. Other thoughts people have? So I'll try and write up some stuff based on these couple of ideas and maybe flesh them out in some things, some ways that we can respond, some ways that we can be proactive if they do come back and say, how would you do this?
Right. Do we have action? I mean, should we talk about if there are action steps or...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anybody has ideas, but...
Well, I think it'd be great if there were like some staff accomplishments or things that staff has done that we're really proud of. I mean, so we're not just going there griping and saying, oh, we're so sad. It's like, you know, the staff does some tremendous stuff. It's an innovative staff. And they need to get a sense that people are also proud to work at Cornell. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, woe is us. You know, it's a great place to work and that we're proud to be here. And look at some of the stuff we've accomplished.
So, for example, how many people are in the employee degree program or have gotten their PhDs or, you know, some... Like that.
Maybe we should try to get these guys something on the front end that they could have, like a one pager.
Like facts.
Yeah, so that they just, you know, so that everyone is seeing what we're doing, since we're going to be at separate tables and stuff, and we're not just counting on verbal exchanges.
I think some of the things that could be real interesting too is to, and I don't know how we would get this information, I mean, I'm sure HR has it somewhere, but to say, you know, we have staff members who commute from as far away as blah to get here because they want to work at Cornell, and, you know, people who have gotten their degrees, people who are attempting to get their degrees, people who have moved into new positions, you know, that they're growing in the, you know, up in the ranks at Cornell and stuff like that. Is that kind of the stuff you're...
Yeah, I mean, anything data-driven would be great, you know.
And I'm thinking, just in knowing most of these people probably work in the New York City area and certainly in the corporate world, to your point, some of the things we might want to point out to them about is what's different about our staff versus staff that they maybe are used to dealing with in corporations. So I can share some of my culture shock when I came here.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things is just the amount of tenure and how there's generations of employees that are here. You go to a Wall Street Journal or a Goldman Sachs, you're not going to see that. I mean, and just to help them understand how our employee base is unique compared to the employee bases they're accustomed to dealing with, I think might be something that will be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because as they're making decisions like on our SIP budget, those kinds of things about us, I think it's important that they understand that when they're making decisions about our staff, that it's probably going to be in a different context than the decisions they make about their own staff and the companies they represent. Mm-hmm. So that's just my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth.
One of the great things, and you know this, is that the sustainability culture at Cornell is being changed by the staff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being driven by the faculty. It's staff driven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could put a nice little block together. It's like, here's what we've done. And it's staff. It's folks over Humphreys. with people all over campus who are like, you know, just, and then we got that award, like, you know, fifth in the world from that one rating system, and it's staff driven.
And that's very different than what you would see in a corporation.
Right.
Very much so. How great ideas can come out of staff and be pursued. There's just so much of that just thinking that happens all over the place. It's very different. Great ideas coming from different places, that's very different than you would see in a corporation, because there's a very set agenda. Whereas here, someone comes up with a great idea and has the passion behind it, they can really push it and start grassrooting all over the place and really make it. Mm-hmm. And I think Sustainville is a very good example of that.
So you want to put something together?
Yes, I will.
Actually, starting it out like that gives us an opportunity to address the morale issue, because it's not the people who are grumpy to begin with who are grumpy. It's the people like us who now are doing, and not me personally, but people I know doing two people jobs or one and a half people jobs and getting piled on and piled on and piled on, who are great employees. So that's one way to address what's happening.
Right.
If you've been here a long time. Yeah. That's a good point, the generational. I mean, really, you walk around campus and ask people how long they've been here. I mean, it's 15, 20, 20. I mean, you hardly ever hear 1 year, 2 years. I mean, it's always, you know.
I think, you know. Job hopping.
There's nowhere to hop to.
The way we are, yes, maybe we're getting closer to meeting budget, but it's not a sustainable model because people are burning out.
I have a question. Linda, you might know the answer. I'm thinking of CIT also offering or acknowledging that tenure of staff by the staff recognition awards that are given out every, what, 5, 10?
Yeah, and
every five years. I'm just curious if anyone knows if that's done across campus.
Each area kind of does their own thing, but they all recognize in different ways.
So I think that's wonderful too, and probably also very different from the corporate world, is that not only do staff want to stay here, but they're recognized for it.
It would be interesting, and I don't know if, I'm sure Mary's office has it, or you might know who might have it, is to find out the average kind of age of time employees are here. You know, the average employee has been here 15 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Can I just highlight that area of opportunity in this conversation? One of the things, because I'm part of the new focus groups, is that the retention for staff of color is just horrible at this school. And because I know there is a lot of people who have been here 10, 15 years, but if you look at the multicultural population, it's a revolving door policy, and I think, like, at the hotel school, it's like 2 year retention for staff of color, and I'm like, ooh, I just broke it. I think it's 2.5 years. But I just think, and I think it would be good to recognize that the school has or the university has recognized it, and with the creation of these affinity groups that they're working towards, so there have been areas of opportunity, and I think, you know, just the push of, like, let's make sure we pay attention to this and that we're bringing up everybody equally and not just certain segments of the population.
Yeah, I think within each table, if we have three tables, we should just pay attention to each other so that we all make sure if someone wants, you know, that we have the opportunity to not just sit there and listen, but to actually talk to a trustee about whatever's on your mind or your experience at Cornell, and even just share the kind of work that you do. It will sensitize them, just as there are, you know, they think of the employees as a blob of employees, but we're people.
How true, Beth, how true.
What other things do they make decisions on or anything regarding the employees besides things like the SIP pool? Are there other decisions that to go in front of the trustees that impact the employees on any kind of that you can think of?
They really give they delegate the administration of the university to the president, and the president delegates the administration of human resources to Mary. And so the things that the employees vote on, or we vote on budgets, and in a budget, in any given budget, there will be a SIP line.
Right.
And it doesn't even say the percentage.
Okay.
It's just there's a amount of money, and I have to sit there and do the math in order to see what it is.
Percentage, yeah.
Yeah, so they don't come across and say, we want to give the employees this amount of SIP. Mm-hmm. It's just it's embedded in there. So they really don't know that much about what's happening with the employees. And in terms of sensitizing the trustees to what's going on campus, we have a focus presentation. So each time the whole board meets, there'll be one topic, and it's usually a dean talking about what's going on in his or her school or college.
Mm-hmm.
Or it will be a researcher who's done something amazing talking about how he develops cups that will disintegrate, you know, over time or whatever. But he doesn't get that from employees. So in answer to your question, it's very minor.
Okay.
It might be interesting to show how much like benefits and parking and everything has gone up in relation to the staff. Cost of living. I mean, and now with the gas prices, I just think it might be. It's not even like we're protesting or complaining. It's just it's data driven. Like here's what our costs are going up, and here's what our cost of living is.
And the SIPs were minimal last year, and the year before we didn't get one. And we're probably actually bringing home less money than we were last year because health insurance went up, dying went up, gas, everything was going up except our pay. So where's the incentive?
Beth, is there anything we can forward for you? Anything that you would like an issue or a topic or a need that you're either one, reluctant to kind of like pitch at a trustees meeting, or two, just something that we could help with from your seat?
At this point, nothing comes to mind because I don't want to spend time on something that they really don't have a say in.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ponder that. So, for example, students come in a committee. They have an opportunity to talk to the trustees on the Student Affairs Committee, and the last trustee did something about Collegetown and just pointed out a lot of different things about Collegetown.
Mm,
and before that, a trustee talked about why she thought it was important for the Gannett expansion to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we all agree with her, but guess what? It's not happening. We don't have the money for it. And so if I come and talk about parking, which I know the trustee who ran against me was very upset about parking, it would fall on deaf ears. They don't control the parking. It's an administrative thing, and you know, there's pros and cons, and you know, so I want to pick something worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to ask one of the things to bring. If you can mention the Kudos website, I think that would be helpful. And our recent, I forget what the award was called. Something Prize, the lady who's in here.
George Peters
Award, yes. And I think the little bios to give out, mm-hmm. I think that would be really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if something happened here in the EA that was worthy of bringing to the trustees, that this is where it would come from. It wouldn't come from my mind. It would come from this group.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one of the things that could be really interesting, because we're sitting here and we were talking about, you know, just someone hit on gas prices and what's going to happen this summer, and maybe something that we want to put in front of the trustees, and maybe they can't make any difference, but to say they should really be pushing to help the university look at work from home opportunities for people, because how wouldn't that boost staff morale to say, okay, I'm going to be able to work home a day or 2 days a week, not have to pay the gas to come in, so I'm saving some money because I didn't get a great raise and the cost of living has gone up and all these other expenses, so you know, maybe tie those things in and say, you know, why not look at that? Can the university go to, you know, implementing across the board for all staff
a four-day
in the office week kind of thing, you know, and a one-day work from home?
They should be embracing the technology that
mm-hmm.
supports.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Video collaboration.
Or can I make a suggestion mm-hmm. how that might be a better avenue? Yeah. Is if we encouraged, I don't even know if we could do this, like the Board of Trustees to support our
staff engagement survey. Because I think that might be actually the most illuminating thing to be the data driven and us figuring out what steps do we need to drive. And I know we're going to mention it, but also I don't know how the politics, but like if we can wedge that the trustees might put more pressure on the president and on Mary to implement this. And I think that's
and that would be, we can request to this group, once we complete the survey, can the employee trustee present the results to
the board,
the board or a committee?
Good
idea. Along with recommendations that we as a result.
One thing that will help us strategically is if we know exactly who's coming, and we, you know, there's many bios up on the trustee site.
Yeah.
It would be good for us to read those and to say, so, you know, Pete, you work in Tulsa, do you? You know, it's like, you know, just the we've shown that we've done a little front end prep and that we can engage these guys, and that it's flattering to them that we've done a little study about them, and then we can have an adult conversation.
I can do that because I have access to the secure site.
Wonderful.
And
so you could send
their bios.
Yay.
And do we think it's beneficial to give them little bios on us? I mean, obviously they're probably not as illustrious as theirs, but you know, give them a little snippet about each of us, how long we've been at Cornell, why we participate in the EA kind of thing, what department we work for. Or
it can't hurt. You know, some people will read it diligently, some will scan it.
Right.
Yeah, it
could
be in the package.
Yeah.
Do we have a name tag?
Oh, yes, everybody has brand new name tags.
Really?
Ordered them fresh.
Ooh, fancy.
Or maybe you could get them the day before or something.
Mm-hmm. I can bring them to breakfast. We have breakfast? Okay.
I have a question, or actually an idea, really, and I'm curious if anyone, or what your thoughts are on this. Just, I think it'd be cool if the EA could sponsor some sort of a staff lottery every quarter or something, or every semester even, that, if there were money, and if we had a budget, say, because people are so motivated by money, and we can't, like, increase salaries across the board. Maybe just doing, like, a per semester staff lottery would be really interesting, where, you know, you have, like, a draw for $300 for groceries or for parking or gas or all these expenses we're talking about. And people would have to, staff would have to actually visit the EA website to submit their name and drawing each semester. That would draw them to the attention of the employee assembly through the website, and also just have, you know, an incentive, something that they can reach for, just be put in a random lottery for.
Is that something we're allowed to do?
But I can give you a better example, maybe not just a lottery.
No, I think not the lottery, but the giving.
Mm-hmm. But maybe not money, but like Tish owns Lowe's Hotels, and Tish is really big on that with the hotel crew. He always raffles off rooms, gives a room to the students to raffle. I mean, like Lowe's,
that could be
Vegas, Lowe's Orlando, those are amazing properties. Okay, if I get Lowe's nights.
Yeah,
that would motivate me.
I mean, there are tons of prizes. It doesn't even have to be extravagant. Yeah. It could be ice cream or something.
Mm-hmm. So I can
travel.
Well, I think in terms of, because I did this for a survey too, there's a rule that if everyone entering in has equal chance of winning it, I think that you are allowed to do that. I'm not sure in terms of actual money, because I did one to pre-pass, annual pass to the Science Center for a survey I was running, and we were allowed to do that because everyone who was entered into the survey had an equal chance of getting that.
So I think what
I just thought, what if we did it for everybody who voted in the upcoming EA election?
Ooh, and that could produce participation.
We're off topic. So this is the thing that I will say. I think this is a great idea. I think we've got a couple of other bigger things on our plate for the immediate future, just in terms of getting people to run for the EA. So I want us to harness our energy to that, but I will bring this to the Staff Recognition and Awards Committee because it seems like it may fit into something like that and see if we can put some meat around that. So
we need some deadlines and stuff on when we want to put this stuff together for the trustees.
Well, we got to put it together today.
like this week, yeah?
Yeah, like this week. Yeah. So, if people can send me bios, do we think people can do that by Friday, their bios? I'm going to, Beth, can you, you'll pull the board's bios and can you get those too? And I will kind of type up these little thoughts and then start bugging people for data points.
Mm-hmm. Can we have some more guidance on content of bios and length
format?
So who you are, where you work, why you joined the employee assembly, and one interesting fact. How's that? What do you think?
Maybe committees and stuff. Participation
mm-hmm.
and
that word.
Yeah. Yep. How about a paragraph?
Yeah, paragraph. Short. Not your whole life story.
Three sentences.
So you want all members, even ones who can't make it that morning. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we could put who will be there and who can't be there, just so they know. So short, 3-4 basic sentences. What do we say, 75 words or less? 50 words or less? 75
words or less.
Even if we're not going to be there, you want one?
I think it would be nice just for them to know who we are.
Disgruntled employees?
If you want to say you're a disgruntled employee,
scary crazy.
Well, we talk about how we have a diverse group of people. Some
right.
like their jobs and some are disgruntled.
And some are
quiet about it.
Anything else? All right, so I will try to get something out to everybody from what we have on Friday to look at.
I will go on the T-Guide website okay. and see if we can see how many commuters come in from how far away.
Mm-hmm.
Is that meet the employee assembly thing we did when I can't remember when we did it, the little video?
Oh, the thing we did, the Cornellcast thing, the
yeah.
staff notes?
Yeah.
We did that in
June. I mean, is that still valid?
I think it's still up there. Yeah.
That'd be a good thing to send those guys. Okay. Then it's like, it's, once again, they can look at it or not, but it's like real. And I think only one person was missing that day, is that right?
Yeah, I think only one person was missing there. Okay. If anybody has any other thoughts, or if anybody has any, people have thrown a lot of things out, so if there are things that you have info on, like Linda, you probably have a lot of data, if you can just
yeah.
forward that along.
Yeah.
Curtis, if you have stuff from the committees that you're on that you can talk about in terms of turnover for staff of color and retention, pass that along, because I don't obviously know everything about everything.
We need all of this by the end of the day on Friday, middle of the day on
end
Friday?
Of the day on Friday.
End of the day on Friday.
And I will try to get you guys something earlier on Friday so you at least have some stuff to look at. Maybe even tomorrow. All right. The next.
Just one question. So, Beth, you're going to tell the folks who are setting up that breakfast how we're envisioning the tables?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thanks.
17. Plus, I don't know if there'll be any of their staff there or not, but 17, mm-hmm. including theirs.
And please, 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 if you said you're going to be there and you find out that you can't,
come anyway.
but if you can let me know the day before or first thing in the morning, mm-hmm. I'll send along my cell phone number just so that we're not waiting and wondering if someone's going to come. Okay.
And it's in the tailor room, and we'll send out a confirmation to everyone who's coming.
Is that in the tailor room? In Bankers.
Behind
you. You just go through the whole spectrum.
Okay, so the next thing we wanted to talk about was kind of tied into what Beth brought at the very end of our last meeting about responding to staff concerns about stress job reductions. We started talking about the article in the Sun and that the somewhat rosy pictured statement that it made that we're coping and we're making it happen isn't really quite the truth. And
I don't think it was rosy.
Well, the staff is doing a good job at holding up that statement.
Well, yes. Yeah, the article
one thing
was that
Rosie. No, the article wasn't Rosie, but the one piece that stood out. Yeah. So, you know, Beth has gotten some feedback from folks about that across the university, and we thought it would be a good idea for us to talk about how we may be able to be an open door for communication, for people to be able to share that stuff with us and where we can take it and how we can do something with it. So really just want to brainstorm a little bit about thoughts that people might have on how we can be a conduit, because nobody's coming to us, but they're going to Beth.
They are coming to me.
So how do we make ourselves more accessible or open to them?
The answer that human resources gives us is that jobs, we're supposed to be changing job descriptions and restructuring a lot, and it's going to take a long time before it happens.
Yeah.
And so for the people who are stuck, and I'm thinking of the people who complain to me who are really stuck between a rock and a hard place, working crazy hours, trying to get their job done, still love Cornell, but are at their wit's end. Even, I don't know what you do with that.
Yeah, like, well, how can we help them?
Yeah, I honestly,
yeah, because there has to be a step. Like, I know at one point, this isn't my current job, my old job, I went to my supervisor, he's like, I don't care. And I said, I don't have a job description. All this new stuff is in my job. Like, what's happening? And he says, I don't care what's in your job description, and just do your job. And basically, what he said. So, you know, so what's the recourse for the employee besides feeling more frustrated and more disillusioned?
Well, doesn't every job description have an other duty that's assigned?
Right, but it's typically 5%.
Yeah,
95%.
I was going to say, maybe my suggestion is what we do for students when they're getting stressed with classes and we can't do anything, we have stress breaks. I mean, like, maybe we could sponsor some of those, like maybe like free massages and Nagua, or I don't know.
Actually, on that note, one of my colleagues just got out of the meeting with the Dean of Cal, and she's concerned about low morale, and she was trying to think of a campus-wide event that we could put on, and the only thing that was, and it was just a quick little talk, but we shout out having different potluck dishes to pass in the different quads. Like, you know, each college sponsors maybe a theme, and you can get permission to walk around to the different quads and mingle with different people. Mm-hmm. So the deans are concerned, I guess. They're hearing it, and that was an idea that was brought out for, you know, Cal, but...
I think the thing that's so hard for me that I'll just throw out there is those things are great, and I would say that's wonderful. If I'm one of those staff members who's really stressed out, do I have time, or is my supervisor going to frown upon me going out to do this stress break, massage, potluck kind of thing?
And do you have time to make the food that you're going
right.
to
make? Right. And am I going to resent the fact that I'm being asked to bring a dish when, you know, why should I have to pay for morale kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Ari?
With Leslie's question, in the performance dialogue, one of the requirements is to go over the position description and make sure it accurately reflects your position. So if you're in that situation, you should say, I'm not comfortable checking that box until the position. Mm-hmm.
So just out of curiosity, how many people here have had a performance evaluation in the past year? Oh, okay, I guess I'm the only one who hasn't had one in 3 years. I know. No, but it is, you know.
No, but in this case, Tanya was my supervisor. And so then we both went to the department.
She's the one who told you to just keep doing your
This is called an intervention at this point.
We need to turn off the tape.
we've gotten over it. We're friends.
But, you know, then we took it up the next step, and that's as far as we got. And never went any farther than that. So I still didn't have a rewritten job description, and, you know, there was never any resolve. There's no resolve for any, never any resolve for anybody in our department.
Also,
no.
You know, every supervisor is a different person. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes it may be that revising somebody's position description isn't very high on their priorities.
Right.
Deal with it, but
definitely.
If the person, you know, doesn't set the legwork themselves and present the document and said, here are the changes that I think would be appropriate, that might also help move it along.
I think there's a difference between, you know, tweaks to a job description and a complete revision. And, you know, I can just speak for myself and say that I'm a person for 3 years who's had almost a completely different job and no job description. And, you know, I consistently resent the fact that I'm getting questioned on work that isn't even in my job to do, but I'm trying to do it graciously. And I think that that's a huge morale issue, and I'm curious how many other people might have that across campus who we don't know about.
Right, with the restructuring.
Right.
Yeah. So, as I hear this conversation, I'm thinking, you know, the EA can't change the entire university, but we could facilitate more talk about it. And so I'm kind of talking brainstorming now, but what if we were able to help bring things to the surface, you know, the Bring It to the Surface campaign, where somehow we help it be okay for people to talk about their job description woes without being afraid. Because that's the thing. People don't want to complain because they think it's going to be negative, so they keep doing these jobs. And these are high performers, people like us in this room, who, you know, the people who talk to me are not, these are director level people. These are band G, band H people who talk to me. And so, if there was a way to make it safe, that might be something we could facilitate.
Well, and that's what I was wondering. Is there a way that we can, and maybe Ari, you might know this, is there a way for someone to be able to send an email anonymously to the EA with a concern that they may have where it's not tied to their email address, that it's just someone could write in and say, I'm working here, and this is the condition I'm in, and I'm afraid to say something, but I want to bring it forward in some way.
We could have a great chat box on our website.
Kind of thing. I mean, you know.
But what's the recourse for somebody like you? I mean, there's got to be something. I mean, so the ombudsman, I mean, there's got to be some. If people have a problem, we have to be able to, you know, send them somewhere. I mean, this can't be like, this is like a horrible situation.
Right.
It's not right. And so, I mean, what's the ombudsman's office do?
The ombudsman's office has said go back and you have a right to ask for job description, which I do, and I have a right to ask for performance dialogue, which I do, but what's the recourse to the supervisor who's not giving that to me, and I don't have a conduit to HR. He is my HR person.
Yeah. Does everyone know there's an ombudsman's office? Over to Stinson. Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm just curious. Your supervisor is also your HR friend?
The department manager.
Like the head of HR? Who's the head of HR for your college?
I'd have to go, well, that would be Sarah Strickland. I'd have to go
that way.
That would be an interesting thing to talk about, because I'm surprised that that's a structural thing that's allowed to be set up, because it seems kind of, you know, contrary to.
Right.
The university is structured for the most part.
But I'm going to look at, and I keep talking about my situation because I feel like I can say what I can about mine. But would I, as the employer, do I, as the employee, want to say, do I really want to go over his head to the HR person when our department's going through a major restructure, many changes, and a whole lot of layoffs? Do I want to rock the boat, or do I just work through and just be pissed about it but still have a job?
The
channel is very focused.
Sound like we really need to create a staff engagement survey.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, that is
our doing it will show up.
And I think maybe one of the things we could do is once we hear back from the president of the college, can we request meetings with all the college deans to EA?
I don't know.
With all of them at once?
I mean,
we'd never get a meeting.
But maybe that's.
I think it is well within the EA's authority to request a meeting with any member of the university administration.
And I mean, maybe we can't talk about specifics. Let's say the president's supportive of this thing, and we say we have the president's support, we would just like, I think a lot of the deans probably do know, but also are not necessarily aware because there's other issues. Let's bring these top people in a room and say, we really want to create a staff engagement survey, and this is why, because, you know,
there's different perspectives. Like I had great performance situations. I have a clear written job, but I think I might be fortunate in my environment. So I think it's really nice to highlight the work we're not doing.
It seems like, you know, the question here is there a deficiency in the policies around the performance dialogue and position description, or is there a problem with compliance with that policy, and is that a widespread issue? This is a widespread issue, and it's a very EA kind of, you know, what is keeping supervisors from following these guidelines, and what could be done to encourage compliance?
Well, and I think part of it is that they can, in honesty, when they do SIP, all they got to do is put in a date that they did a performance evaluation. They don't have to show anything.
They're actually, I believe that there are guidelines this year to use the performance dialogue in SIP.
Maybe now for this year, maybe moving forward, I don't know.
What if HR like looked at every form like in their own division and said, this person, make a list of the people that don't have updated job descriptions, and then hound the supervisor? Mm-hmm. To get
it's gotta come from the top down.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I think, like, if the whole hustle is, I mean, it's an expectation. Like, there's just no question that you're gonna do it.
Yeah.
So why another, you know, another department?
Can I tell you, it can't be HR who hounds them, because when I was in a generalist role, there were people who went 3 years without description, and as much as I hounded their supervisor, my word really didn't have anything to, in terms of clout to get them to do it. It would really have to be the management of the area who would say, you need to get this done.
But this sounds like a good question.
But I think the HR can provide a list of who there's not one for.
Isn't there something that if you don't do somebody's performance dialogue, you don't get a SIP?
Yes, but all they have to do is put in a date.
An attestation. And usually a score. I mean, that was what I was required to do for attestation, is the date and what their score was.
Right, but you don't have to do a performance evaluation. You don't have to turn in that written evaluation.
Really?
But Jason has something that he's been itching to say.
I had a couple things. So I don't think this just all just neatly wraps up into just the performance dialogue thing. Because even if your job description said you do this, this, and this, and you're doing that work for four people because you were all in equal roles and now there's only one, that doesn't really solve the problem. I think it needs to be a top-down message of even something as simple as supervisors being required to check in with their employees and say, how are you doing? Are you okay with the workload? Can we do something? Can we manage? I mean, just the simplest little thing. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I love Curtis's idea about speaking to the deans, because I think the deans really do care about their staff, but there's a disconnect. The deans are in the academic realm. And yes, they're also the top of the hierarchy for administration, but it's a college business officer that's there controlling things, and sometimes that's, you know. And the deans, you know, like to hear that information, but they're not always part of the daily administrative drama. They don't get that.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of people here who aren't in any colleges, you know, work for college. And I think, you know, when's Gordon and Mary coming here, May or something?
Yeah, our last meeting.
I think managing is really hard. I think it's a hard skill. I think the managers here generally are pretty average, because in part they never had to manage. When things were just great, it's easy to be here. Let's have some big cookies, right? That's our managing here. And you hit on it. It's hard to do it. And I think the managers need more training to really take their job seriously, instead of them being all beleaguered and all stressed and, oh my God, it's hard to manage. Because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. One is the money component. That's sitting there. That's the 800-pound gorilla for everybody. The other is just like, I want a manager who's like, you know, managing and leading and giving me input and not shutting down. That's not much for an employee to ask.
What I've noticed is those who have been promoted into supervisory positions have been promoted in because they were really good at what they were doing, rather than, here's what skills it is to be a really good manager. And that's what I saw in my experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying everywhere there's some really fabulous managers around, and, you know, I could name some. But I've seen a lot of that where someone was really good at what they did as an expert, and so they were promoted upward to now manage people, and it's a very different skill set.
It is a different skill set.
Than what they were doing.
Definitely.
So that's, I think, one of the challenges that we have.
There's all sorts of training opportunities here, you know, and it's like, all we want is leadership.
I've witnessed that too, Linda, but then I've also witnessed something being done about it. I have seen some managers in that boat going to training for management, and I've over time witnessed change in their behavior for the better.
So. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it happens.
Absolutely. That's
it definitely helps to get the training, but it is in some units that I know of, at least CIT, it is there, it is available.
So no real solutions, no real answers to that, other than more training for managers.
Well, but that doesn't help me today as a person.
Right.
And I'm going back to something that one of you said very early in this conversation, that I think it was you, Beth, about being a conduit for information. That's not how you said it. Bringing things to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I have found to be the most useful is when I'm talking with other people who are having similar experiences mm-hmm. to mine. So is there a way for us to work with you in the wellness program or for us to work on our own to create forums that enable people to talk to each other in an environment that doesn't have Mary Appleman, that doesn't have the supervisors, but that is employees invited to come and just talk with each other about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you call it. I don't know how you frame it so that it seems like it makes sense. It could be talking with the EA. It could, you know, I'm not sure what it looks like, but I feel like there is an immediate need for some sort of awareness that I'm not the only one who's having this experience. It's not going to make it go away, but it makes you feel less lonely.
So a forum that EA could host that would be, you know, an opportunity for people to come in and talk with us and see if we can gather some common themes out that we can bring up?
It could have a next step. It might not. I hadn't thought it through as far as that. It just feels like we started with people coming to Beth saying, stuff really sucks right now, and I don't know what to do about it. And we have to change the performance dialogue system, or we need to train managers. And we forgot that we're talking about individuals mm-hmm. who are having problems who need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get us back to how do we get at the issue as it is.
A facilitated block.
That could get totally out of hand.
I think first this point, the engagement survey, I think will give people an opportunity, especially if it's anonymous. Maybe it can be co-sponsored, at least with the EA's name on it as part of it. And then we have those open-ended questions at the end where we can ask people to give, you know, a lot of detail on situations and stuff so that we'll have that information.
I think without
that data, we can't.
But is there something that we can do in the interim? Because we haven't even gotten a response from President Scorton on that, and then we have to build it and all that. But is there something that maybe we put out there as EA and promote to say, we're here for you, the staff, to hear your concerns, what's good, what's not so good, what's whatever, come to a meeting, call one of us, and maybe we do some sort of campaign. I mean,
well, it could be focus groups because the focus groups could then be used to inform the survey.
Mm-hmm.
That you could gather groups of staff together, 10 or 12 people at a time, mm-hmm. have a focus group discussion, analyze that information, and use that as the part of the framework for designing the survey. Mm-hmm. And that then gives people a chance to talk, and it has a next step.
I think. I really like that idea. It's a really good idea. And do we have money to have somebody do that for us? So one of us wouldn't have to necessarily take that on unless there's a volunteer. But that's, you know, that's a fairly big commitment and of time. So I'm just wondering.
We've got plenty of money.
Well, we're going to talk about budget.
Whoever did the PopRep focus groups, I thought they did a good job.
That was, I think,
really
good.
Okay.
Oh, yes, really good.
Yeah.
Can I wonder if this point of something. Regarding the responding to a stress, I'm wondering, you know, like if we can go back to our normal life before the economy recession started, it might help, you know, staff and everyone too. Because I've been attending meeting and being a member of EA, you know, I've been hearing a lot of complaints, too much complaints, you know, in our life, and it seems that life is kind of upside down and too much going on, and I'm thinking that it might help, you know, all people to go back to normal life, like as Mr. Bush pointed out, you know, going back to normal life once when during his presidency. So
the problem is we can't go back to normal life. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. This is the new normal.
Yeah, right. But still, you know, like instead of complaining too much, you know, like it's not going to get it anyway. It's not going to take us anywhere, you know. Mm-hmm. If we complain all the time, although we talk and we take actions, you know, but but still, it's we're doing this for good for the society, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of my experience and my thinking, you know, my thing. So, and it doesn't really seem like the staff rejections isn't work. The job rejections isn't working at my workplace. And so, that's again, I'm complaining. You can see. So, but we all need to do better, I think, instead of complaining and.
Right. So yeah, that's the.
I'm not sure whether it makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It does, because the job. What has changed between before the economic crisis and now is that our budgets are smaller, we have less people, and the way it all happens and the result of what happened, I think what you're saying is it's not working. It's not feeling like it's working.
Mm.
And so how do you get it to fall into a new normal, something we can live with, without feeling like we have to be complaining about it?
Go ahead, Ari.
One thing Tommy Bruce said at the last, he did a presentation on the administrative streamlining program, mm-hmm. and one of the things he talked about is, you know, this mantra, let's do more with less, but there are situations where you can't do more with less, and really, the question should be, what don't we really need to do? What do we need to give up in order to mm-hmm. get back to a sane place?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody's ready to do that, unfortunately. I mean, I think the staff is ready to do that, but I think the people who were leading that staff are not ready to make that decision.
But certainly mm-hmm. at that level, they are talking mm-hmm. about reducing things, and that's why mm-hmm. you can't get the Chronicle in print anymore. And I think they're also discussing spacing out, or at least reducing the amount of offerings printed mm-hmm. so that there's just areas. Those kinds of decisions need to be made mm-hmm. at all levels.
Right, and I think that's part of the issue, and that's where we are going to. But in the interest of the fact that we only have 15 minutes left, table this discussion for now, and I guess we can continue to think about it and revisit.
Yeah, I think we should come back to the focus group.
Yeah, that's the focus group's idea. So moving on, report from the chair. I don't have much of anything to report at all. Just we got an email from the Transportation Hearing Advisory Board. They need some new members. Because they're losing members to retirement and that sort of thing. So I'll be putting out a call for people either on the EA or others that you may know may be interested in participating on that board once I have when they meet and how often and all that. So I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I had a note here. Did we follow up with
yes.
Isabel?
I'm just waiting to hear back, though. Okay. So that's pretty much all I have. We haven't met with Mary since our last EA meeting. So moving right along to minutes, we have two sets of minutes to approve, the corrected minutes from our February 2nd meeting, and then new minutes for the 16th.
Tommy, did you say transportation hearing?
Hearing appeals.
Hearing appeals board. Different than your board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm good. There was just that he is Sophia Dara. And then that's on the February 2nd.
Any last call for changes on the February 2nd minute? We did a lot of changes last time. Are there any other?
She just gave a couple of minor words.
Really minor.
Okay.
Like a instead of a he.
Okay.
Any other changes besides the few?
Just page one.
Yep. Just page one. Everything else is great.
For the February 2nd?
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve February 2nd minutes.
Second.
That's the second. Did all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Good. David and Tricia, that good for you guys?
Aye.
I just wanted to make sure that I still read.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the February 16th meeting minutes. Those are new this time around. Does anyone have any comments on those?
I just gave Amy a couple. Andrew Brockman was not in our meeting.
He's never.
No. And then under the committee reports, academic calendar committee, complicity is used, and it should be complexity.
And the song
didn't have to.
It's a real word.
It made it really not true. That's just my own.
Okay.
Sometimes I just, you know. I'm talking to myself.
Any other changes to the February 16th minutes? I make a motion to approve the February 16th minutes with the small changes Leslie made.
Second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. All right. Committee reports. David, you want to talk about transportation advisory?
Yeah. So I finally made it to one of the meetings, and basically what they're working on right now is a huge push to consolidate all the different types of parking permits.
Mm-hmm.
And even like within one parking permit, they made a lot of exceptions for people. So there were like 60 different permits, but actually they would break down into like 600 different permits, which is just like is out of control. So they basically want to take a lot of lots around campus and just combine them and make it simpler. There's less amounts of permits and it'll just be easier for everybody. But the main reason I wanted to go was my concern with free lots, and as far as I know, they're not changing. Like A lot will stay free. I didn't hear any mention of them starting to charge us to park. The one thing I did hear was, which I didn't think it was awful, but motorcycle permits have been like $60 for the life of your motorcycle. It's a one-time fee as long as you own it.
Hmm.
And that's going to change to like over $100 per year. So if you ride a bike and you want to park it on campus, it's going to skyrocket.
Well,
I mean,
you got to figure it's only a 4-month deal, really. You only ride your motorcycle.
Which makes it even more expensive.
Are they forever?
Yeah. It's just like they're gouging motorcycle.
That's in just off of the sustainability goals.
Yeah, it is.
That's why.
That was the only thing that really bothered me. Everything else sounded like this.
Were other people bothered by that?
I don't think anyone rode a bike there.
Well, the interesting question would be how many people does that affect? And is it something that we should be pushing on regarding sustainability and whatever other issues?
Okay. Do you want me to get more info?
I mean, I would just be curious if you can ask them how many people does that affect.
Even if it's not a lot, like you said, it kind of is the opposite of sustainability. I mean, less people are going to ride instead of more if it's more expensive. So I don't know what they're thinking.
Right. I'm just curious, you know, if they say, oh, it affects 10 people, we probably won't have as much of a leg stand on as if it affects 1,000 people.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious of what the...
But it can't be that many where they're going to make a substantial amount of money.
Well, that's part of it.
Where is the motivation behind that? So...
I had an issue that was raised that was transportation related, and you've already mentioned it, Leslie. At one of the bargaining unit presentations that I went to last week, it was the day that the gas prices started climbing rapidly, and this was a staff member who drives in from at least Watkins, if not further. And his initial statement was, I can't come to work anymore. He can't afford to buy the gas to get to work. And
he's driving the tank?
I don't know what he's driving. I don't know the man, but my sense is that he exaggerates.
Mm-hmm.
But he is feeling really stretched, and he asked me to bring the issue to the EA, and I said, well, we're talking about transportation next week because you were giving your presentation. And I said that I would raise it that it's becoming, people are living further and further away because they can't afford to live in town, and it's costing them more and more and more to live further and further away because of the gas. And so it's a catch-22.
And I would imagine some of the folks who are in bargaining units coming, they're working off hour schedules, which isn't conducive to taking the bus and stuff like that.
They started their shift at 8.
Okay.
But whether there is a bus
full learning how to walk in. That's just one point of information for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they have discontinued the Skyway County bus, so there's no longer a bus.
What county is Watkins in?
Skyway.
Is it a
city?
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a bus that came to Watkins,
but they've discontinued it. That'd be something neat to send out, like with all the different buses and vans, like an update, so employees know because of the gas leak and. You know, this is a reminder where you can catch a bus.
Carpools.
Yeah.
I wondered if that was something communicated by the transportation office or some other commonplace.
You know, I think that's a good point. Like, there's no longer a, like, carpool website or someplace to post.
Well, there's a Zimride. There's a Zimride to go over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never heard of it. So.
Yeah, maybe something needs to be updated somehow, where all your different options.
Maybe some furnace. The one issue that I had from the meeting, I had this bargaining unit full, sort of transportation related, but they have to go, you know, they were saying that they work at different sites on campus, but they have to go to one place to do their Kronos punch in and punch out, and there's a limited number of spaces where they can park to do that, and they've worked it out with transportation, but apparently now the Cornell police are staking it out, and as soon as they park illegally, they're giving them a ticket. So... I told